Okay, well, we've got six people in a Ford Fusion here on the floor of the CES, and I'm sitting here with myself, barely, Ed Niedermeyer, Alex Roy, Ro Gupta from Carmera. Hey, Ro, I can barely see you.
Hey, Gerson.
Jason Stinson with Renovo, and Chris Heiser with Renovo. I'm just barely hanging on here.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Because last night we had the Atomic Cats party.
The Atomic Cats party or the Atomic Cats party?
Well, we're working on the branding right now.
If you could, you can't see right now because Kirsten's not on the camera, and we may not even get workable video out of this. But Kirsten is currently wearing an Atomic Cats shirt, which is the must-have item of CES 2019.
It is the must-have item of CES. It will soon be. on our website.
Three six,
one of these
three,
days.
3 months,
yeah.
Probably 6 months.
6 months,
probably
definitely.
6 months. Yeah.
Limited edition, unlimited availability.
Yeah.
But if you pay for it now, you'll save $5.
So I'm going to stop talking because I'm losing my voice because we had about, 300 people.
Easily.
Do you think?
Yeah. And we owe a huge thanks to Ro and Carmera for helping make this happen with their beautiful, if somewhat Trumpian, suite at the Paris
Hotel. It was fitting.
Hotel.
It was fitting. And also, I should say that not Jason or Chris were helpful, but one of their employees was incredibly helpful in making that in making the T-shirts.
Yeah, so
that's although Heiser and Stinson did raise the bar for fashion as usual.
Thank you.
So yeah, so this is a post party family and friends session of the Atonicast here.
So I'm gonna turn it over to the rest of you. Take it away.
Yeah. So CES. other than attending, the Atonicast party, which was obviously the highlight. Like, what else have you guys been seeing that is even a little bit interesting, super interesting?
There's a boat directly behind us that's so large it's not possible that they actually brought it in through a door. And we're trying to figure out how they actually got it. It is like a 120 foot yacht.
Yeah.
Inside. I have no idea.
Have you seen the helicopter that's on the other side of it?
No.
Yes.
A helicopter.
Yeah. It fits inside the truck.
And do we know what that company does?
There was some
discussion about that, and I don't think anyone's been able to figure it out. But I mean, honestly, they should be advertising their logistical capabilities of like getting a boat to Las Vegas that size and getting it in the convention center.
Yeah, I mean, look, in all seriousness, we use two events in the year to kind of use as a barometer for essentially hype and progress. Basically, we gauge the commercial hype cycle, the Gartner hype cycle based on CES every year. And then for other reasons, more technical reasons, we kind of use CVPR as sort of a gauge on a lot of the enabling technologies, especially for what we do for maps. But, I think you had who was it from Gartner on before Mike Ramsey?
Mike Ramsey, yeah. We did a whole episode on the hype cycle.
I think we're tracking to that curve, man. And I think it's a good thing. Like, I think, I don't think it was all, like, I don't think this year's been, like, doom and gloom, right? But it's definitely been a lot more, like, realistic, subdued. Yeah, a little more subdued, a little more pragmatic.
The motto of the city of Bellingham, which is the city of subdued excitement. That's their actual official motto.
Yeah. Bellingham, okay. Washington?
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. Yeah.
So I feel like maybe this is the year of subdued excitement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was even, we were even sensing that a little bit last year. I think 2017, 2016 was extremely, top of that hype curve for us. That's what we saw. What do you guys think?
I think that's right. It's we have been seeing, 2018 was not very many people were interested in demos. So we definitely have seen the transition. I think last year we saw the transition from people talking about, oh, look, we can drive across Golden Gate Bridge, or we can, do that kind of hype demo-y thing, at least from our perspective and our deals and who we were talking to. They were definitely much more talking about actual commercial deployments. But I think I agree with you. Like, certainly through a number of events that happened last year and just the general, the timeline, the media piece of it, the media people have been less. It's you can kind of see it starting to level off and maybe starting to dip back down the other direction.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's kind of endlessly frustrating for us is that despite the heroic efforts of the Atonicats, I'm still stunned at how many conversations I get into with people who are CEOs of corporations that make tens of billions of dollars a year, and they cannot articulate the difference between level 3, level 4, and level 5. And that they really don't even understand the difference between what Tesla is doing and what Aurora is doing and what Continental is doing. And it's just, it's, I feel like a lot of the hype around the industry actually comes down to a misunderstanding of what the people who are actually building the technology are trying to do. And so education, I think, is desperately lagging the sort of marketing angles, and we get swept up in discussions that have nothing to do with what we're actually working on every single day. And so I think that's going to continue. And until we see some successful commercial deployments that really catalyze in people's minds what is a geotonomous solution, to trademark, I just paid Alex $5 on Venmo for saying that word. Until you actually see these things working in a commercial context, I think you're still going to have a lot of just misunderstanding about what people are actually doing in space.
I got a question. You mean to tell me that CEOs of companies doing $10 billion in revenue a year don't understand this? Are these CEOs in the tech sector? Are these automotive OEMs or
automotive industry people?
Yeah.
So these are traditional automotive, but these are big players in the existing automotive landscape.
Now, if I gave you a piece of paper, each of you, and a pen, and you could write some names down of these companies and slide them into the back of this car, would you feel comfortable doing that?
Totally, absolutely, 100%.
Do you have a pen on you?
Yeah.
Some crypto.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. I know you don't have a pen on you, so it's that's an easy one.
No, I mean, on that theme, though, you know, so, well, first of all, for us, and probably you guys too, but, you know, for us as a horizontal provider, right, we're able to see so much of the industry, OEs, the, you know, mass companies, even segments like trucking, last mile delivery, et cetera. And then also even just at like side conversations at the party last night, you know, which is where you learn a lot. I think to that theme, I think also the industry's gotten a lot less dogmatic or religious about, oh, you know, we only do it this way, or, you know, basically people are under pressure to ship something. And I think there's a very much like, you know, a pragmatism and like, hey, we will use every, you know, method we can, whether that's, and for, you know, in our case, that's been beneficial because, you know, mapping is one part of the stack that's ends up being really hard for most companies to do in-house. But even beyond what we do, another related theme of that is you started to see, and I think you guys predicted this, you know, with your city series, and we also figured out that we could work with governments by sharing map data with them as kind of data exhaust. But we saw a lot of the industry do that by necessity last year, right? Like, you know, and that includes, you know, the Ubers of the world. But, you know, I was talking to a friend at the party last night. She's with one of the, you know, the leading full stack AV companies, and she was telling me how her job has transitioned from more like traditional, you know, biz dev, salesy kind of stuff to government relations, you know? And that's like, we can't just, you know, like ship a bunch of code and expect things to go, you know, beep, beep and boop, boop and work. We need to figure out, all right, practically, you know, how are we working with the rulemakers? How are we, you know, de-risking it? Are there third parties that can help? So it's just like, you know, people are like using every single, you know, patch and hack they can now just to be able to ship something.
I would say to kind of play off of that a little bit, I think what's been interesting is, you know, for the last few years, the real focus has been on the hardcore AV stack piece of it. Perception, object classification, path routing, like kind of that thing that moved from the research industry into you know, a viable thing. And that's been the sexy jewel and the shiny bright object. Starting last year and certainly moving forward, you know, maps is really important, but it's maybe not like dead center in that thing. And so, you know, maps started to become really important a few years ago. Like, people were really starting to talk about maps. Now we're starting to see other, like, to deploy an autonomous vehicle in whatever it is, grocery delivery or robotaxi, there's a lot of other things besides, I think Alex or one of you guys have talked about that, like all the other stuff that has to happen in the car, whether it's tie up to the government or tie up to point of sale systems or all the other pieces, we're starting to see that happen. The downside of that, or not downside, but it's not as shiny and sexy, but it is vital to actually getting to the deployments. And it takes, it's a piece that gets tacked on. Safety's also kind of in that realm. It gets tacked on And it will take the industry a while to get through all of that, and it's not as sexy and it's not as fun to talk about on the media. Wow, there's this new point of sale system that goes into autonomous cars. How cool is that? And so it isn't easily hyped. And I think that you're seeing that it's not really a slowdown. We're all progressing towards these things. These deployments are happening.
It's just hard.
It's hard, and it's just not the piece that with the rule, the 80-20 rule, the part that we're in right now is not as sexy and not as easy to point to. Wow, it's really cool. Waymo put in a new point of sale system into their car, and it's really awesome. It integrates really well with your credit card. How awesome is that?
Doesn't make for as good of demos, right?
Exactly.
But I mean, do these two sort of converging trends, right? Like on the one hand, sort of better appreciation of the complexity of this stuff, but also more pressure to deliver. That seems to like create a crunch, right? Because that's two different pressures coming together. Is that scary? Is that challenging? Or is that like something that's good and kind of shakes out, like separates the wheat from the chaff in the sector?
I think it's focusing for the industry. And what you're seeing now is I think a recognition that trying to design a robotaxi for downtown Paris is super awesome and not likely to happen anytime soon. And so I think everybody in the industry, both the technology providers like Carmera and Renovo and really the fleets, the people that are going to operationalize this, they're looking now for things that are deployable. And that we talk about, self-driving, but really what we're doing is we're building less expensive transportation and mobility. That's really the end goal of all of this. And so you're looking for places where the cost of transportation is high because the cost of humans are high, and that the mission is achievable with today's technology. And I think everybody is now being driven to push for solutions in that space, and that's why you're seeing ports and closed communities, and a common partner for Carmera and Renovo is Voyage. They're doing retirement communities.
Yep.
These are things that are achievable. They're low speed. They have a relatively tight geofence. They have a simple enough mission. It's not really simple at all, but by comparison to downtown Paris, it's simple. And you can deploy it in 2019. And I think every startup ultimately is searching for something that proves out their model. And if the answer is your model gets proved out in 2025, that's a long road to walk. And so yeah, I think we're all looking for those opportunities.
I love troughs. Troughs are great because, if you're not at the trough yet, then, you don't know when you get to the actual, maturity part of the curve, and that unpredictability makes it very hard to plan against. It also makes it hard to fundraise. When we did a fundraise last year, and a big part of that fundraise was convincing the investment community of where we are on the curve. And they actually, the smartest investors were actually, felt a lot better by convincing them that we are actually now in the trough, because that allows you to plan against that. And, and in terms of the companies, as Chris was saying, it just comes down to pragmatism, constraining ODDs, that kind of thing, which is all good. The other byproduct of this, I think, is I kind of think there's been a little bit of like a second or third mover advantage because, the companies who have either launched or come out of stealth in the last, say, 18 months have been able to learn from, we need to have the ODD or the business model or the operational, model baked in from the get-go, not like an afterthought after we prove out that the robots work, And we just actually, a lot of the conversations yesterday, for example, a lot of the meetings we took yesterday were companies we didn't even know existed until about three months ago. And, they were just quietly, observing from the sidelines and learning from mistakes or also learning from the changing, environment, both regulatory and commercial. And I was just really impressed by how thoughtful they were in terms of, we've already checked that box on the business model. We know how we're going to get paid. We know what the passenger mile travel fare, economics will be. I was not seeing any of that like a year ago.
Is the investment community keeping up with this? Because I think the scary thing is that, the scary scenario is that investors get so spooked by, this trough of disillusionment thing, and they're unable to distinguish maybe in some cases between the companies that, among the pre-revenue companies that have to, or the pre-profit companies that have to, continually raise money, that maybe they don't distinguish between the ones that are sort of, moving towards sort of that slope of enlightenment, right, which comes after, and that maybe some good companies get shaken out along with the bad ones.
I think that there's kind of at least two different investor communities in this space, and what's a little bit unique about auto tech is strategics play a role at a way earlier stage than we've seen in anything else. You know, fintech, anything else. It's all institutional VCs for the first three or four rounds and then a strategic partner. And it's kind of a little bit inverted here where a lot of these strategics get involved. And I think they have a long view and they understand they're being disrupted. And so they're aggressive and they're less valuation sensitive than the institutionals. And so I think the institutionals, you know, if they had their druthers, they'd sit back and sort of wait for things to emerge commercially. But I think if they do, they're not going to get, you know, big returns. So there's a pressure on them to participate in rounds today. And I don't see that letting up. I think you'll hear a lot of people saying like, we want to step back. But then today, Sequoia, $500 million round going into Aurora. So it's like, really?
Reportedly.
Fair enough. Yeah. But I think that this is something that the pressure is still on and people understand it. It's a multi-trillion dollar market. So the goal is still there. There'll be shakeout and there needs to be. But I don't see the investors ignoring this as an opportunity because we're not at scale in 2019.
Yeah, it's funny. One of the investors who should go nameless, although I have a lot of respect for, and these guys know them well as well, who was actually a pass, but actually one of our best passes when we raised our round. The back channel feedback we got was, you know, we, Carmera, were doing everything, you know, they loved us, love what we're doing, everything right, all our numbers great, but they were petrified that this is going to be another clean tech in terms of it taking, you know, 15 years instead of five, you know, that's fair. However, I think one of the biggest reasons why actually still the majority of the investor communities, there's still a lot of money that's waiting to be deployed in the sector is because whereas clean tech, a lot of the catalyst people were relying on was like groovy, good vibes. And, you know, the world like just kind of, you know, being driven by, more
the
by the
mission.
Economics
weren't as powerful.
Exactly.
As,
this is like just from a pure mercenary economics driven standpoint, there's just way too much, you know, like dollars at stake for anyone to, you know, just ignore it. And so this basically snowball is just, you know, it's just continuing to get bigger and bigger. And so there's an economic imperative that exists in mobility that maybe there wasn't at the forefront of stuff like clean tech.
When the smart institutionals are also going to look at this, and you know, if the hype curve is kind of slowing down, and if things kind of trough a little bit in this next year, then this is actually the time for the smart VCs, and those guys know these cycles. This is actually the time to invest.
Okay, so. Do you know that if there's a lot of VCs here at CES, is CES a good place to actually, if you're one of the startups down in Eureka Park area, which I love, it's my favorite place.
And we're going to go tour.
We're definitely going to tour
tomorrow, yeah.
Or if you're at your level now, you've raised, you know, rounds, you are developing a product, is CES worthwhile to, I don't know, have meetings with VCs? I mean, they're all in Silicon Valley, right? I mean, what's the value of coming here if you're looking for investment, or is there a value?
I mean, for us, we look at CES less for that than for, it's just the one, love it or hate it, it is the one time and the one event where everyone around the world who, you know, matters has sent someone, you know. The other shows are great and stuff, but they tend to be much more regional or a little bit more, you know, horizontal in terms of technology focus. But, you know, you want to, like that person who you've been trying to meet with who's in a completely different Asian time zone or European time zone, whatever, there's going to be that person or one of their colleagues is going to be here. And that's more for us, it's more from, you know, customers because the auto industry is global. And so that's what we think the best part of CES is. The investors, you know, honestly, actually a lot of them, I don't know, a lot of our investor friends have been trying to avoid CES in the last couple of years, but I don't know about you guys.
No, I think you got it. This is the Super Bowl, love it or hate it, and the density of meetings and connections you can make, but it's primarily on the customer basis.
Yeah.
What I would say is that there's a lot of events that happen around CES, dinners and get-togethers and things like that, where you can meet people in a context and have a private discussion. But I think at the end of the day, you're just setting up the meeting that you'll eventually have with the partnership to talk about them, and I don't think there's any deals that get closed, whereas you can get very close to closing deals on the customer side in 48 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at just the party you guys threw last night, I get, like, just, you probably had 10-15% of your crowd were venture investors. Like, there was a pretty reasonable population of venture folks, and I think, like these guys are saying, I think for us, from a company side, our focus really is on deals and suppliers and vendors and customers, but for the institutional investors that are coming here, their value is not necessarily in closing a deal. That's sort of, it's seeing all the different stuff. It's making the connections, finding out what people are up to, kind of at a looser, more casual level. The actual discussions are going to happen, you know, offline. People are going to go to Silicon Valley, or they're going to go, or the VCs are going to come to them, or whatever. That's I think that's still going to happen that way.
So I think we're going to wrap up here, because we're being surrounded by crowds trying to do demos. But
I feel like we haven't said anything controversial yet. So, Alex, throw one at us. Go.
Controversy,
Level
Alex.
3 forever.
Hot, give me a hot take, Alex. Well,
why do we need maps at all? I mean, I don't really understand. Like, I get around and just fine. Memory.
Middle whatever.
Humans drive without maps all the time.
No, Can we end with your guys' take on the barometer? You guys have interviewed a bunch of people in the last 24
hours.
I
will say that I haven't walked the floor as much as I would like, because I've been in this amazing Ford Fusion. Thank you, Avis.
Yeah.
But to me, it seems like all of a sudden there's still this push towards, you know, level 4, level 5 autonomy, but all of a sudden, like, advanced driver assistance systems, like, going to the next level has become cool again. Obviously, Toyota has been talking about that, and they had an announcement, or basically an update. TRI had an update on, like, their Guardian. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, even Lewandowski is, with Pronto AI kind of going that route. We've got NVIDIA selling a B2B product called Drive Autopilot.
Level 2+.
That is
plus.
Level 2+. Plus.
Fucking level plus 2+.
What?
Plus. Plus fun.
Yeah.
All of a sudden these big and small companies are suddenly talking about this again. And I had an interesting conversation with Jensen yesterday, actually. And
Jensen
he said
Huang,
that,
the CEO of NVIDIA?
Yes. Sorry. But there's, I mean,
we're not all on first name terms. So.
No, but I mean, Jensen is like, it's like Cher, you know, like we all know, you know.
More like Prince.
More like Prince.
You say he's
the
Cher of
autonomy?
No,
what?
No.
Or Shingy?
But he told me, and I probably will write a story about it, he was actually thinking about drive autopilot first, but pursued full autonomy first.
I just see what, Sterling Anderson has to say about that.
So,
Sterling's a gentleman. I doubt that he'll comment on anything. But you can comment for him if you want.
To me, what's really interesting is actually seeing the difference between sort of the perception, which I think everyone agrees that, like, I mean, there are fewer attendees this year, which obviously is not all due to the automotive space. There's probably other factors, or the mobility space. When you get beyond just sort of your sort of surface level perceptions of sort of how this show compares to others and sort of what the general vibe is around the space, and you have more in-depth conversations, kind of like we're having here or some of the ones we had at the party last night and elsewhere, what's fascinating to me is just the extent to which this hype cycle issue is purely about public perception. When you get down to the technology itself, it's still developing and it's still making real progress. When you get to the investment ecosystem, like we were just talking about, it's still happening. It's not like the money's drying up, right? Like, so it's not like things are grinding to a halt. It's just the perceptions got overblown and are sort of correcting, right? And I think that that's why, to me, like, if I had to pick one thing, you know, that happened at the show that seems significant, is the creation of this coalition PAVE. It's just sort of a bunch of players in the space coming together to educate the public. And I think that's just a sign that, like, they get it. And I think some of the companies who are involved in that have been maybe to some extent part of the problem. And I think, you know, good on them for recognizing that it needs correcting. Others of them obviously have been good about not overhyping. But I think that is significant that players in this space recognize that the hype has been self-destructive. Not necessarily, you know, yet to the fundamentals of the business and the ecosystem, but certainly to perception, which matters, and that educating people in a fact-based, sort of reality-based way is really important for
and
everyone.
And the number one way to do that is subscribe to the Autonomcast.
I like to actually wrap up with a real, like, hand grenade comment.
Here we go.
Anyone who says that they've been thinking about ADAS and Drive Level 2 Plus Autopilot, any of that, who doesn't know who Bernard Ziegler is not qualified to take investor money or work on this problem.
Bernard
if you don't
Ziegler,
know who Bernard Ziegler
go
is, Google it.
I think they're playing you off the stage, by the way. Yeah.
They're playing our song.
There you have it. There's our soundtrack, you all know, right. In the background.
We should wrap it up.
All right. Yeah. So thank you, Renovo, Carmera. I'm going to thank myself for showing up.
Yeah.
Of course. I'm getting to that. We're sitting in a Ford Fusion on the CES 2019 show floor, courtesy of Avis Budget Group. Thank you for letting us use your cozy car.
Yeah.
We love intimate. It.
Continental.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Otani Katz.
Yeah.
Thank you, Otani.
Thank you. Happy 2019.
Yeah.